Why would they negotiate? What is the point? 3 weeks, they will, of course, they will be able to control the Hormuz for the next 3 weeks or maybe longer. The damage will have already been done by them in our supply lines, in Western supply lines, in Western commodities. Many things won't be able to be produced without helium. Many things won't be able to be extracted without sulfuric acid. This is going to change dramatically, if you like, the color and the idea. We're going back to what it was, just to be clear, in before the 70s, when America changed the whole formula. But before that, Iran was a major power in the region, a major regional power, a major civilizational power, a major Islamic power in it. And in the 70s, effectively, the United States decided that it wanted to make the emirs and the monarchs, the Sunni emirs and monarchs of the region, their proxies and put them in opposition to Iran. And of course, together with Israel, Israel has also used this to contain, weaken, and undermine Iran. And now Iran, which has been planning this since 2003, is unfolding their plan for a return of Persia to prominence in the region after all these years, since the revolution, and since Dick Cheney in, if you like, it was Dick Cheney in 2006 after the war in Lebanon, and he was complaining bitterly then. Cheney said, well, look, you know, I mean, what's happened? I mean, now the war in Lebanon, this was the war between Israel and Hezbollah in Lebanon. They seem to have won it. And we thought Iraq war was going to weaken Iran. And we thought this was going to weaken Iran. And he had with him in this meeting, Prince Bandar, who was then the head of Saudi intelligence. And Bandar said, listen, you know, we can sort this out. The king says, and the king knows, he says, the weakest point on for Iran is Syria. We can cut Syria. And then, apart from actually a collapse in Iran, cutting off Syria and its lifeline to Hezbollah is the next best thing we can do. And Cheney initially said, oh, no, I mean, that's, you know, how would you do this? It's too difficult. And Bandar said, Islamists, we'll do it with Islamists. We can do that. And don't worry, you don't have to be involved. And that was an attempt to try and create, if you like, a Sunni primacy across the whole region in antagonism and in hostility to Iran, the former power that had been very much an influence in the region until that point. And so now we are seeing the move to shift it back to what it was. Iran emerging as a dominant power, and the, if you like, the states, the monarchs, the emirs of the region, of the GCC, taking a subordinate place in the new paradigm.
So now we have to see, where do we go from here? Because that, you kind of alluded to this at the beginning. That may be the Iranian plan. They may want to return that. They may have had this for decades of an idea. And now then, perversely, only because President Trump opened the door with this war of choice to actually allow them to put it into operation, now it is going in there. I just put in their IRGC spokesman said, basically, they're implementing it now, that only we will determine who goes through the Gulf. But that implies that they can. Now, there is a lot of traffic rolling around. I've got some sources from a couple of different places that imply that we may be about to do something on the ground to try and shake this up, to take away the Iranian capability. The missiles apparently are going to continue to rain. So the question is, if we go in on the ground somewhere, in addition to what we've been doing in the air, is that going to compel Iran and force them to open up the strait on our terms, not on theirs?
Oh, I think it's likely to be a catastrophe for the United States. I mean, the geography of Hormuz is most unforgiving. I mean, you know, this has been something that has been fought over. 1500s, the Portuguese established forts all along the Hormuz to control it at that time. And then eventually it was taken away from the Portuguese and ended up with the British for a while. But the Hormuz is terrible terrain. All along the, first of all, the length of the Hormuz, the border, the area of Iran extends for 2,000 kilometers. That's the extent of the, if you like, their facing onto the Hormuz waterway. And it's cliffs. It's mountains behind and cliffs at the front. So all along those cliffs, it's honeycombed with anti-ship missiles. In the mountains, you get fire control. Hormuz, if you look at the actual peninsula, if you go back to the peninsula, you can see that anyone trying to go there, because Iran has 270-degree fire control, not from missiles or anything, but simply from the mountains behind. That's where their artillery is. It's close enough to control it by artillery. But of course, they have many other things. They have high-speed submersible drones. They have speedboat surface drones. They have manned drones. And they have something else which has not been put into the consideration, is they have about 25 or so mini submarines. And the mini submarines, unlike bigger submarines, these mini submarines can actually operate inside Hormuz. It's not a large, deep, if you like, seaway, but the mini submarines can operate in it. So where are these troops going to stage? How are they're going to be split? How are they going to get there? I mean, you know, I see people talking. I heard, you know, Hegseth and talking about helicopters, Apache helicopters, and Osprey aircraft. I mean, for goodness sake, you know, that part of Iran is watched with, you know, man pads would bring down an Osprey or an Apache aircraft. I know I was sort of responsible in Afghanistan, and we brought down Russian helicopters, and other things were brought down by man pads. Then it's very easy terrain for Iran to defend, because they have bare rugged mountains behind cliffs. I mean, there's no land. I think there are about three little beaches along that area, and 2,000 kilometers. You know, 2,500 Marines coming in and one Marine expeditionary unit. That means one man per kilometer. I mean, you know, and then the 82 Brigade comes in. It's a light infantry. They don't have heavy armor. They don't have heavy weapons. They just have the food that they carry with them. How long does that last? And where are you going to resupply it from? And what is going to be the consequence? And what is Iran going to do in response? Iran has made it clear, if there is an attempt to take the islands in Hormuz or to take Karg Island, they then will attack the remaining elements of infrastructure in the Gulf, the Gulf states' infrastructure. Especially those that have declared war on Iran, as UAE has just done so. It's their ambassador Tiber in Washington has written a statement saying that the UAE now has joined with the United States in a war on Iran. So it's a belligerent in it. And I don't think that people are looking at the wider landscape of what's happening. You can't just look at it in terms of Hormuz and nothing else. Look further. Look what's happened in Iraq. After the United States bombed some of the official army of Iraq, the prime minister, Sudari, gave the militia, the PMU, the Hashad al-Sha'abi, permission to join the war with Iran against the United States and against Israel. And they are mobilizing. They have been mobilizing in Erbil. They've been attacking the Kurdish forces in Erbil and the American bases in Erbil. And they have been attacking that, heavily driving the Kurds, if you like, into a trap with the Iranian forces on the other side of the border. And they are also massing on the border of Kuwait. They are enraged by the attack on the supreme leader. Iraq is a majority Shi'i country. And many of the Ayatollahs in Iraq have declared a mandatory defensive jihad against the United States and against Israel. And so the Iraqis are actually mobilizing, and they're advancing, and they are mobilizing at the border of Kuwait, and they are mobilizing at the borders of Syria elsewhere. And they're ready to join this war if America decides to escalate it further, or if UAE escalates it further. Then you will find, I think, that the whole topography, the war is then spreading. Turkey will then undoubtedly have a say in Syria. It will want to place its forces there in Syria, and we will see. Already, we have in Hezbollah massive attacks taking place against Israel. I don't know if you've been following it, but they're losing their Merkava tanks. I mean, in one day, 21 tanks destroyed by Hezbollah. 21 tanks. And of course, the crews, too. I mean, some crew got out, I believe. And then the day before, it was 8 tanks. I mean, they are suffering enormously. Hezbollah is attacking the whole of northern Israel. The settlers are very unhappy, and they want to leave and to abandon the townships on the north. And in Israel itself, we have Naftali Bennett, who's likely to be possibly the next prime minister, in saying, we've lost the war. We're losing this war. We have lost it in Iran. We are not achieving any of our objectives in Iran. We've lost it with Hamas, and we lost it with Hezbollah. We are losing the wars. And he was very clear, because then the chief of defense staff said, called an emergency. It's in the Hebrew papers today. And he said, listen, I'm putting up 10 red flags. We don't have the troops for this. We're so short of troops. We can't do a war, all these wars at the same time. And what we see, and in fact, it was also put out by RUSI, the Royal United Services Institute in London, says, you know, Israel has run out of missiles. It's self-defense missiles. It's standoff missiles. It's 16 days. It has run out of these missiles. And so has America. And America's had to remove its one carrier. The other carrier is now far off the shore. So we have to take the big picture of the war as well into account when we talk about, you know, troops landing in Iraq, in Iran, in the Hormuz. What would that mean? It would mean the war widens, becomes a regional war, perhaps even somewhat of a sectarian war. And so America would be in the middle of this. And it won't find a friendly staging point in Iraq. In fact, I think Iraq is intending to occupy Kuwait. And Iran, if there is an attack and UAE is a part of it, may decide to invade the UAE. We're talking about something very different. So that's why I made these rather sort of terse comments about the cabinet meeting. where everyone was saying, you know, oh, it's wonderful. You know, they're begging for, Iran is begging for a negotiation. They are failing. We've defeated their air force. By the way, what he was saying, I mean, Hegseth is just untrue. They do not have air superiority over Hormuz. Look, they just had an F-15, I think, no, F-18 or whatever it was shot down over Bandar Abbas by the Iranians have been slowly showing their hand, not all at once. And now we see that they do have air defenses and that they're quite efficient.
Let me go down that path, because that is part of the curiousness of it. And for those who may have missed it, I want to show a bit of what Secretary Hegseth said in that meeting. But I'm going to kind of set it up by looking here. I mean, this is in the New York Times. You were talking about the Israeli admissions that was leaked, that apparently that they're conflict that they can't even continue to fight with the troops they have. And this is the precedence here, is that we are already suffering, and 13 of our military bases in the region are all but uninhabitable. So that's the entry point. We have had both an F-35 and an F-18 shot down here recently when they have attempted to penetrate. Lots of MQ-9s, the drones that we have for reconnaissance also have been shot down, at least 11 of them. And yet with all of that, here's what Pete Hegseth is boasting about yesterday.
A-10 Warthogs, if you know them, you love them, and Apache helicopter gunships are flying strike missions inside Iranian airspace and throughout the Strait of Hormuz at will. See, you only send these slow, low-flying, close air support platforms when the enemy has no meaningful air defenses left. Their presence is proof that Iran's air defenses are gone. Their command and control is shattered, their top leaders hiding in underground bunkers, while their mid-level commanders are being crushed in the field, the morale of their fighters plummeting. We see that disconnect daily.
So talk about a disconnect daily. I mean, what he described there and what you described so beautifully in the foregoing section here are literally incompatible. They can't be talking you at the same place. And yet this is the guy that's going to be in charge with the orders, the instructions of the guy sitting next to him to potentially launch a ground operation to take care of, you know, to force the hand here. How do you see that unfolding?
Well, it's a catastrophe. That's why I said a catastrophe, because there doesn't seem to be any real understanding. I mean, at that level, at the level, of course there is in other parts of the Pentagon, but there is not an understanding at the level that there should be about what they're facing. To claim that they've got air superiority, air dominance, is just untrue. There is only some areas of it, of, if you like, penetration. But all of the attacks on Iran, all of the attacks, vast amount of attacks, are by standoff weapons, standoff cruise missiles, JASSM missiles. And America is running out of those, too, by the way. They're now, I think, RUSI, RUSI, say that perhaps it can last for another 10 days, but then they'll be exhausted. So they haven't got even those. So to suggest you can fly the Osprey, which is a very vulnerable aircraft, into hostile territory. I mean, the Iranian army, just to remind ourselves, I know you were aware of it, but, you know, this is not just a sort of little irregular group. It's a million-man army, million-man army. And that's not the militia. The Basij is also another million. I mean, these are big forces to take on, and to take that on by 2,500 Marines, I mean, I think is asking for trouble. It should be a real concern to people in the leadership. But the way that cabinet meeting was being held, and the discussions, and and Witkoff coming in and saying, "Well, look, you know, I mean, what we have to say to the Iranians, if they don't take this opportunity, woe betide them. You know, this is the last chance you've got. You've got to sit down and sign up to the 15 points. 15 points, they're not interested in those 15 points. They've done with all of this. Now we are in the decisive war For Iran, this is their existential war, and they're going to prolong it as far as necessary to meet their objectives. And of course, part of this will be that they expect that Hormuz will be a major source of income for them. They talk about $800 billion a year from the fees that they will charge to vessels passing up through Hormuz, all the vessels operating in one, don't forget, and that they will get paid. In fact, they're already getting paid. Pakistanis, I believe, paid $2 million. Other ships are offering to pay. And all of this is circumventing new payment mechanisms that the Iranians have already put into place, means that they're getting these payments circumventing the dollar siege, if you like, a financial siege. They're going around the wall of the dollar sphere in order to take payments for the vessels passing through. So, I mean, and they control, I mean, as I say, you know, they can control the Hormuz by artillery almost, let alone use their missiles. And their missiles, of course, will reach it. And we've seen them. We see now in this last week, new missile coming out from Iran, which they've been holding back. This is not the Khorram Shah 4, this is the Fatah 2, hypersonic, flying at 18,000 miles an hour. When it comes back into the atmosphere, it has a secondary engine, rocket engine, which then ignites as it re-enters the atmosphere and therefore makes it steerable. So it can do a sort of ballet dance around any remaining missiles, air defense missiles fired at it. But what you see, and I mean, this is incontrovertible, as Hegh says, America has air superiority. Iran announced missile dominance over Israel because it was able to land two major missiles on Dimona town, just adjacent to the nuclear research center, and on Arad, causing huge damage. And Israel, Dimona is the most sensitive, the most highly guarded target in Israel. They were not able to put up any air defenses. So the Iranians are saying, in contradistinction to what Hegseth said, actually, we have missile dominance. You don't have air dominance. We have missile dominance over Israel. So, you know, I mean, these narratives don't even touch at any single point. I mean, the one that is being presented, cabinet of, you know, a desperate Iran, so sending gifts to Trump of tankers and begging for the start of diplomacy. You know, actually, they have the cards in their hand. They are winning this war.